guys. It's Friday again, and it's time for another movie retrospective. Going back to Italy this time around. We actually did another Lucio Fulci movie a couple months ago. We did The Beyond, which is probably one of his best-known ones. But today I want to discuss the first in the so-called Gates of Hell trilogy, the movie known as City of the Living Dead.
Yeah, strange movie.
It is a little.
I liked it, though. It's mostly imagery, but we can get into that.
Well, yeah. Now, the thing about this is that, you know, as I said, this movie, when it came out on VHS in the United States, it was actually first called The Gates of Hell. It has subsequently been released with its, you know, something closer to its Italian title, which was City of the Living Dead, and that's usually what it's known by now, like when it came out on DVD and stuff. This movie actually came out in 1980. And as I said, it's considered the first movie of Fulci's Gates of Hell trilogy, the second of which was The Beyond, and the third of which was The House by the Cemetery, which we'll probably get around to doing one of these days because Shudder has that as well. Shudder actually has all three of them up at the moment. So this one is not, I feel like it's not quite as accomplished as The Beyond, and I know this is going to be very funny to those of you that are Fulci fans, but it doesn't have the narrative coherence of The Beyond, yeah. And I'm sure I'm probably the only person that's ever said that in the history of the world.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was kind of swimming in certain areas, you know, but I still enjoyed the movie. It looks really good, and a bunch of weird shit happens in it. But I spent a lot of the time not knowing what the hell was going on.
Well, until I told you to just not worry about it and not be... I said, basically, this movie, it's not so much... like, you know how a lot of sort of just classic, just regular movies, I guess, quote unquote, have a sort of, you know, three-act plot structure?
Yeah.
You know, you got your rising action, you got your climax, you got your denouement.
Yeah.
This is more like... Well, let's think of an idea, like a rough idea for a movie. In this case, you know, the Gates of Hell opening in this particular town. And then we're just going to show you episodes that suggest that.
Yeah.
And then we're going to end the movie.
So that's a fancy way of saying normally you have a story. But in this one, something happens and you witness things that people in the town witness and you make of it what you will.
Yeah.
That's really kind of what it's like. Now I was watching it. I was enjoying it. I was drinking, you know, too, like I do. All right. And I thought I was maybe losing my mind or getting slightly high and not know that I'd missed something. You know, like, are these people important? And you'd be like, no, there are other people in the town. And that's so this is the first time we're seeing them, right? Because to me, a lot of people look alike, you know. Yeah.
You know, those white people.
Yeah, white people. Kind of look alike. After a certain amount of drinks, you know.
Well, after a certain amount of drinks, people in mailboxes look alike.
And I was like, who are these people? You know, oh, no, they're just introducing them now. They're just some people in the town that are seeing some stuff. Oh, okay. So I felt better. I felt like I wasn't losing my mind.
Yeah, because he legit thought that he was, like, so drunk that he had completely lost
all
thread of reality. Because he had no... See, that's what happens when you drink and watch Lucio Fulci movies and you've never seen
tequila.
Them before.
Drinking tequila.
You think that you've lost your grip on reality.
Yeah. Well, it was an experience, you know. I just started to roll with it like watching a music video.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It is a bit like that.
Music video. And it did have cool music. It actually had a background music that kind of sounded almost kind of like dark wave going on in the back.
Yeah, I actually think Fabio Frizzi did the score for this, if I'm not mistaken.
There's a part towards the end. It sounded like VNV Nation.
It did.
And this is in 1980. So I'm like,
this came out in 1980.
Yeah.
Now, as I said, we talked a little bit about this on, you know, our review of The Beyond, which actually also kind of doesn't make a lot of sense, but makes more sense than this. Now, the Gates of Hell trilogy is, you know, much like I mentioned on the Dario Argento Deep Red review, where I was talking about his quote-unquote animal trilogy of his Giallo movies, which are more a thematic trilogy than, it's not like a continuing story or anything like that. It's just kind of like they have similar elements, so they seem like they should be grouped together. And that's kind of the same thing that happened here. He's got, like, some of the same actors, you know, in all three movies. They all kind of have... you know, Walking Dead zombie type thing. They have some supernatural aspects. They have a very gothic atmosphere. And all three of them, I believe, and I haven't seen House by the Cemetery in a long time, so please correct me if I'm wrong, but all of them are set in the United States, and they were actually filmed here.
Yeah, it looked like New Orleans area.
It was actually Savannah, Georgia, is okay. where it was, and Midway, Georgia.
They show some old...
And New York City.
Big old country houses, you know, kind of the high ceilings, because there was no AC with the tin roofs, you know. They were loud, you know. Friends of the family had some of those back in the 70s, and they were on their last legs back in the 70s, a lot of those houses. Most of them are torn down now. They were loud, and they were hot.
Yeah.
Because it just, you know what I mean? The ceiling went right up basically to the tin roof.
Yeah.
You know, it was up there, you know, 12 feet, and it would just be baking in the sun.
Yeah.
You were lucky to have
baking
fans.
Baking as in, like, not like bacon, like,
yeah, no,
bacon and
baking
eggs.
Baking in old southern houses, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they were a trip. They were creepy. They were loud.
Yeah.
There's no way you could sneak through a house like that.
Yeah,
because the floorboards. Yeah. They were pretty, though. They were pretty, but they
I think that contributes a lot to. I mean, like I said, where they filmed some of the cemeteries and stuff like that. That was actually the main cemetery where they filmed. I think it was in Manhattan. But most of the exteriors of the houses and stuff, when they're walking around the neighborhoods, that's actually parts of Georgia.
Yeah.
All the interiors were actually shot in Rome, like in a studio, as they usually did at the time. And, you know, again, just like in The Beyond, it's kind of like a multinational cast. And then later they kind of dub everyone into English, using their voices, like Catriona McCall. She's a British actress, so she dubbed her own voice.
Called her Catriona.
Yeah, well, she goes by Catherine McCall, too. But I think when she was in Lucio Fulci movies, they billed her as Catriona McCall.
Must have been a nickname.
Maybe. I'm not really sure.
Big Catherine.
Yeah.
Big Catherine.
Yeah.
Catriona.
I like her, though. She's in all three of these movies playing different characters. Now, in this one, this actually has a little bit, and I guess The Beyond has this too, but it has a little bit of a Lovecraft influence.
You can see the inspiration.
Yeah, in the sense that the thing that opens the gates of hell is this priest that hangs himself in a cemetery in a town called Dunwich, or Dunwich, if you want to be pedantic about it.
Right.
Which they never say is in Massachusetts, but they do say that it was built over the ruins of the original Salem, which I'm kind of like, well, is the original Salem in a different place than the actual Salem? Because that's still there.
The original Salem is in the South, in Georgia?
Well, yeah, but like I said, they never mention it's Massachusetts, but, you know, they say Salem, so I guess you're supposed to assume that it's Massachusetts, even though you can clearly tell
that
it's the South, because the way the houses look and stuff, they all kind of look like plantation
Probably,
houses.
You know, they made these movies mostly for the European market, and the Europeans at those times wouldn't know there was between the South and the North.
Well, they're just probably like, whatever, it's just like, you know.
Yeah, Americans, they all eat hamburgers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? I love hamburgers.
Yeah, I know.
Although we had ramen today. But, so that is what kind of triggers it off. We don't know why the priest, whose name is Father Thomas, why his particular suicide opened the gates of hell. But was it just because it was a suicide? Was he evil? Did he do it on purpose? Who knows? Don't worry about it. Because you're not going to find out, so I'm telling you that right now. But it's just kind of the thing that gets into it.
They were just trying to get the movie done.
Right.
They're using tropes that came from other things. And
right.
Let's get this movie done. That's what they're doing. Yeah.
That was a pretty good Italian accent, though.
Yeah,
and I should say, too, that Lucio Fulci, just like he did in a lot of his movies, he actually does make a small cameo in this, like, as a pathologist. And it's very funny, like, hearing him dubbed by an American actor, because I'm like, I don't even think he could speak any English at all. I don't know if he even ever learned to speak English. But yeah, so this town called Dunwich, and this priest hangs himself, and there's gates of hell. Now, in New York, for whatever reason, Catriona McCall, she plays a psychic named Mary Woodhouse. And for whatever reason, they're having this seance at this house in New York City, and she sees the priest hanging himself and figures out, or knows somehow psychically, that this is going to cause, like, the gates of hell to open, which is a bad thing. I mean, because it's going to mean that people are going to be coming up out of the graves and walking around and doing all kind of crazy shit. So she says that, she screams, she drops dead, or so you think. Because you're thinking, Catriona McCall, she's dead like 5 seconds into the movie. And you're like, that can't be right. She's like top billed, right?
Right.
So you're like, she can't be dead already. So they bury her. these two like half-assed gravediggers are like, oh, time to go home. Let's just kind of leave it half buried or whatever. This guy who is like a investigative journalist, his name is Peter, and he's played by Christopher George. And he is actually at the cemetery because he got interested in this like weird death, this weird psychic death and the shit she said. And he happens to be in the cemetery and hears her because she wakes up in there and she's like, oh,
yeah, she wasn't dead. She was alive.
Yeah. She like was in a coma.
Really good buried alive scene, and I was terrified of that when I was a kid. And every element of what I was afraid of being buried alive is covered in that scene.
Yeah.
Which makes me think maybe I had seen this.
And you may have.
And just remembered that scene. He's trying to get her out with a pickaxe, and the pickaxe is going through the top of the coffin. And almost hitting her in the face. You know,
and she's like, ducking
it and ducking it. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I'm alive.
And then finally he's able to break a hole in it right where her face is, and you just see her face and her mouth screaming from a hole in the ground. It's pretty. Something that, you know, as a kid, it'd terrify you.
Yeah.
But you're digging and a mouth comes up out of the ground. You know, it's pretty cool.
It's like, that's the thing. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And you're thinking, like, even when you're watching the movie, you're like, guy, it's like, can you, like, put the pickaxe, like, kind of over to the sides? You know, like, just get her right in the face.
He's already busted a hole in it. Slow down.
Yeah.
She can get air.
It's like, you see, it's it's all right. There's no hurry now. She's got oxygen.
Yeah.
But, like I said, the visual image of it is so cool. Like, you know, her in the coffin and it's all dark and blue and, like, this fucking blade, like, coming down next to her face and she's, like, freaking out and stuff.
There's a lot of good things. You see this movie, you know, and they're enjoyable to watch, especially when, like I said, when you're not really taking it seriously. You just watch it like it's a damn music video.
Yeah, you know? It's just, like, a series of cool images and kick-ass gore.
Yeah, put your brain in neutral when you're watching it. Yeah. Just have fun. And when you see it that way, you can see how these Italian movies did a lot for the newer generation of horror movies that started coming out of the United States later in the 80s.
Yeah.
Like, you can see where, like, Evil Dead 1 and 2 got a lot of their tone and stuff like, Reanimator. So you can see, I would say maybe even Friday the 13th series kind of borrowed from these. Movies like this did for the American horror genre what Sergio Leone's spaghetti westerns did for, you know, good modern westerns like Unforgiven and Josie Wales and High Plains Drifter. You know, the Italians were good with tone and style
stylistic elements,
right? They weren't real good with story structure all the time.
Yeah,
they didn't care about that. They just wanted to show you some cool shit. And you'd have an emotional reaction. Basically, it was like going through a haunted house.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Haunted houses don't have plots, really. You just go through.
Or like having a nightmare.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just kind of like they wanted to show you just really disturbing images with enough of a story, you know, kind of threading it together that, you know, it at least had a little bit of coherence. Like you can kind of just follow along with it.
Right.
Like I said,
this is the basic outline.
Yeah, it's a very basic story. Like I said, the gates of hell open, and then you just see all these scenes of mayhem and like all this crazy shit happening.
Yeah, and some people over here see it, and then some people over here see it, and then some people over here see it, and you get to see what everybody sees. And then it's over.
And then they kind of meet up later on. Like, they're all kind of interconnected, like, because, you know, there is one point
it's like a grand finale.
Yeah, there is one point where Mary the psychic, you know, after she gets dug out, and she says, you know, I don't know where the town is, but it's the city of the living dead. This guy hung himself, and his name is Father Thomas. She's like, I saw his tombstone in my vision. So we have to figure out where this town is so we can get there, because she somehow knows, like, again, psychically, that they have to, like, open up the tomb or do something about him and, like, close it before all the dead people start walking around. So so that's, like, there's a parallel story of, you know, her and the newspaper guy trying to find Dunwich, and then you go back to the town of Dunwich and you see like all the crazy shit that like starts to happen.
Yeah.
You know, this priest, like I said, he's like a dead person, but he like kind of can pop in and out like a ghost. You know what I mean? So they're not like traditional, like shambly kind of zombies. Yes, they're like all yucky and they have like worms and rot and everything like that, like all over their faces, and they're really disgusting looking, but they can kind of like bilocate and shit. So they're like supernatural zombies.
Right.
You know what I mean?
They're like manifestations I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Kind of like, from The Fog.
Yeah.
You know, from the movie The Fog.
They're like revenants.
They're like revenants.
More than zombies.
They can be solid for a minute, and then they vanish, and then they come somewhere else.
Yeah. Now, the thing that a lot of people really like about this movie is that, and you have to consider, this came out in 1980, and like I said, the Italians, particularly in the 70s and 80s, they were way ahead on the gore meter.
Yeah.
So a lot of their movies were cut in various other countries or banned. You know, even for the U.S. market, some of them were cut up and everything, but they had like a reputation among horror fans, you know, in the 70s and 80s. It's like, oh, you got to see this one. This is fucking nasty shit. Because like American movies just weren't doing that level of gore at this stage. I mean, you know, if you see fucking Cannibal Holocaust, and even if you see this, it's like, it's still pretty disgusting, like, even by today's standards.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's some great scenes in this where, very famously, the one weirdo character, Bob, who has a self-inflating sex doll with a front-loaded pussy, which is very... I love that scene so much because it's just like he's in his like abandoned shack or whatever, where he lives, and he takes out his little sex doll and she's all like deflating. It's one of those old sex dolls. It's not like one of those. And he throws it and it goes, and like, you know what I mean? It gets big when you need it to, just like,
Big Man Japan.
But it's like that. And it's just like...
Yeah, and it didn't really explain itself. They just show you shit.
That's what I mean. And it didn't need to be that way.
Yeah.
Like, he could have, like, you know, inflated it. Or it could have already been inflated. Yeah. But it's like they just did that because I guess they thought it was funny.
The Italian scene was its own unique scene, you know. It didn't cost them much to go to the theater. People didn't really have, you know, I don't think televisions were super common in Italy in 1980. Maybe, I imagine everybody did. But evidently, people went to the theater, you know, like once a day. And that's what I remember.
Yeah, they
have
a very...
So they made a lot of movies quickly.
They liked going to the movies. It was like a big social thing.
Yeah, and it was like a scene where they'd come out with one movie and they liked it. So they said, well, we got to top that. And then somebody else would come. So the movies would get progressively more redonkulous.
Yeah.
Because they would all start trying to step on each other's dicks and stuff. And the American crowd had no idea what the fuck's going on. They're just seeing these things in a vacuum.
Yeah.
You know? So they looked quite bizarre to us.
Yeah.
They still do. There's something kind of Japanese about them, the way that they're filmed. They sometimes feel like a Japanese movie.
The structure of them is more Asian than American.
Yeah.
Because if you've ever, like, a lot of people that like J-horror, like, you know, Asian horror films, a lot of them are more, like, have a more episodic quality. Like, if you see something like, for example, you know, just pulling out of my ass, like The Grudge, it isn't like... You know, like I said, A, B, C, it's kind of like A, and then A repeats. And
right.
You're seeing the same thing happen over and over again. Like, it's more cyclical, I guess.
That's the same thing with most anime. Most anime doesn't make any damn sense, really.
Yeah, right? it's just
meandering.
They tell stories in a different way. Yeah. There's usually, like I said, The Grudge, it kind of, like, tells the same haunting, like, from three different successive families that live in this haunted house.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like a linear... type narrative, at least not from our perspective. And I feel like this is kind of the same thing where, like I said, they have a situation and they're just showing you like snapshots.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, there's a bunch of guys in a bar and all of a sudden the mirror breaks and then the wall cracks open. You know what I mean? It's like supernatural shit is happening and they freak
in the
out.
Town.
And run away. You know, and you get to see, like I said, the guy, the creepy guy, Bob, who is initially blamed for all of the weird shenanigans going on in town before it gets really supernatural, because he's like, apparently it's hinted that he's like some weird child molester
or something.
Yeah, he's
also some kind of weird pedophile.
Yeah, like a pedophile.
Yeah.
So he's kind of blamed for it. And later on, he's friends with this girl and she's like trying to like comfort him or something, because he's like, oh, this weird shit's going on, and he saw like the priest ghost and everything like that, and her dad comes in there thinking that he's like molesting the girl, and he basically takes Bob's head and just very slowly pushes it on the drill lathe and did his drill bit all the way.
I remember seeing
head.
I remember that scene,
and it's
from a kid.
Really good effect.
Yeah, it looks like that
even
drill
still
goes, it looks like it goes right through his head. Yeah,
it's, I mean, I'm not really sure, like, I'm sure nothing budget they had to pull this off.
Yeah.
That looks really real.
Yeah. Well, you could tell that they had a bunch of special effects gags that they could do.
Yeah.
And they said, this is what we can do right now. We have to work these gags into this movie.
That's basically...
You can tell that they did that.
And I think that was...
But it's all right.
That's Fulci's thing. He's like, And Dario Argento does that a bit, too, where he's like, we want these particular violent set pieces, and then we're just going to kind of put this half-assed story around it.
There. Yeah.
So, the drill scene, that's probably the most famous. Yeah. But equally famous, I think, is the one scene where there's a guy and a girl that don't really figure into the plot. They're just townsfolk or whatever, and they're making out in a car.
Yeah.
And they, you know, it's dark and foggy and all this kind of shit. And then they look out and they see the ghost of the priest like hanging there.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, like her eyeballs start bleeding.
Yeah. She...
Which I guess is like a stigmata type thing, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. There's like a Catholicism.
Yeah. And then she starts vomiting up her internal.
She vomits up all of her internal organs.
Like turns herself inside.
But then the guy's like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
and
that's just like, the way the Italians were.
And some of that, like, you could tell, like, in the close-ups, it was a fake head. But actually, in the long shots, they actually made this poor actress eat a whole bunch of tripe with the red shit on it and then throw it back up. So she is actually throwing up intestines. They're just not hers.
Yeah.
They're sheep intestines.
Is there anything about anything else about this one? We've been going on about it.
But, no, that's all right. Oh, also, you get to see, like, a rain of maggots. You get to see all this other stuff. Now, one thing I want to mention...
Which I think that was actually an inspiration for a Skinny Puppy song. God's Gift Maggots.
Yeah.
I think that's what
they're talking. There was a scene like that in Suspiria, too, though, where maggots were... Although it wasn't supernatural, they were just, like, maggots all up in the ceiling, and they kind of started coming down through the ceiling. But, yeah, there was also... So I just want to talk a little bit about the ending, because a lot of people are really super confused by the ending of this. Because apparently, here's the thing, like, they get to Dunwich, they get down in the tomb, which is actually a really cool scene, like, you know, like, under the ground, and, like, there's all these fucking skeletons and shit under there. They end up, like, sticking a big wooden cross, like, through the right into his crotch, and it's all rotten and gross and everything. And then, so they save the day, they save the world, they come crawling out of the tomb, and it's daytime, and then... They're crawling out going, oh, yay, oh, we did everything. And then there's, like, this little kid that's in the movie called John John. His whole family got killed. It's, you know, it's a long story. And he's there with the cops. And then they're looking at the kid like, oh, he survived, yay. And then the kid starts running toward them. And then Katrina McCall and the other guy who lived are like, oh, shit, oh, shit. And then she starts screaming. And then freeze frame on the kid running toward them. And then the screen just cracks. And that's the end. Yeah. And some people are like, what is that all about? Like, what does that mean?
Didn't mean anything. They just ended the movie.
No, now, the story goes
that
when they were making the movie, when they were in the editing process, the editor spilled coffee on the final scenes of the movie.
Okay.
And they didn't have the time or the money to do anything about it. I've heard that story. I've also heard that... The kid at the end was actually supposed to be a zombie, and the cops were supposed to be zombies, and they were supposed to have, like, worms and shit all over his face, but the kid didn't want to do it.
Right.
So I've heard that story, too. Hmm. So I'm not sure if they actually did film some scenes with the kid, like, and the kid running at them, and the kid's a zombie, and the cops are zombies, which actually would have made sense as an ending, because they came out thinking they saved the world, and they're like, oh, shit, now everybody's zombies, you know what I mean? Hmm. So that would have made sense. But the fact that they didn't do that, I don't know if the ending got destroyed and that was all the footage they had left, or if the kid just was like, no worms, yo, I'm not doing it. So they just said, well, we're just going to go with this and we're going to crack it at the end, so maybe people will pick up on the fact that he's supposed to be dead or he's supposed to be a zombie or something like that. But that's what I heard.
Because, not how it came off, though.
But yeah, I was always confused, and a lot of people are confused by that ending. But those are the stories that I've heard about it, which would explain a lot.
Right.
Because had the kid looked like a zombie, then that would have made more sense.
Right.
As an ending. All right, so let's wrap up this discussion of the Lucio Fulci film, City of the Living Dead. Like I said, you know, we've done The Beyond already. We did it a couple months ago. We'll probably end up doing The House by the Cemetery a couple months down the line, just so I can say I completed the trilogy. And like I said, all three of them are on Shudder at the moment if you want to check them out. And also, I've heard that Arrow, the UK releasing company, has done like a really nice Blu-ray of it with like a lot of special features and like cool booklets and all kind of shit in there. So check that out if you're a Fulci fan. And remember, if you like the show, like, share, subscribe on all your social media. If you'd like to financially support the show, you can go to our Patreon page. patreon.com/13oclockpodcast, or you can go to our blog, which is 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com, and there's a link in the sidebar to a PayPal account if you'd like to give a one-time donation. Remember, the movie retrospectives, just like this one, come out every Friday. We also have 13 o'clock matinee, three new movies in the theater that comes out every Sunday. And our regular episodes are up every Tuesday, so check them out. We will see you next time. Bye.